from Omnibus of Speed, An Introduction to the World of Motorsport, edited by Charles Beaumont and William F. Nolan, published by G.P. Putnam & Sons in New York in 1958. This is Change of Plan by Ken Purdy, which originally appeared in August of 1952 in the Atlantic Monthly. Pietro Linetti sat in his car, a little man, very erect, well back from the wheel. He looked confident and happy, and so he was. In about 1 hour and a half, he intended to kill himself. The decision had calmed him. It had put an end to the torments of the 5 years that lay leaden behind him. It had restored the lilting serenity, the certainty that all was for the happy, happy best that he had, as a younger man, worn like a feather in his hair. Pietro Linetti felt very well indeed. He looked around. Most of these people were new to him. Lots of them had still been driving sports cars when the war started. He knew Pierre Martin in the Ferrari, an old competitor. He knew Leon, of course, with his bull neck and wrestler's arms, and Ignace Minnelli. Minnelli had one of the new Alfa Romeos, but so many of the others were young and new. The boy next to Linetti, for instance, in the blue Talbot. Maurice Lasselle, called Popo. He'd been a great hero in the French Resistance. He drove very hard, but with no style. The Englishman, Danton, in an old ERA. That pink skin, Linetti thought. That bland blue eye. A thin old man of about 29 summers. He looks a bit like Dick Seaman, but Seaman is a dozen years dead, burned in the Mercedes-Benz at Spa. Varzi, too, dead in a skid in the rain. Rosemeyer, long dead. Christian Kautz, dead. Ted Horn, dead. Hepburn, dead. Linetti, dead. The dour little man grinned to himself. Not yet, he said. Not quite yet. Linetti will die when he wants to, and not in bed, no matter what the damned doctors say. And after he has won this one, and in no accident. The 60-second gun boomed out, and one engine fired, coughed, and settled down into an undulating roar as the driver gunned it up and down. Another started, then two, three, another, two more, until the hot July air was pulsing with the sound of 30 open exhausts. Linetti hunched his shoulders a bit and stared at the fat man who was the starter. The fat man held the bright flag over his head as he counted off the seconds on his stopwatch. He will be late, Linetti thought. He loves himself and what he is doing, and will do it as long as he can. In 30 years of watching starters, Linetti had learned to read their little minds. He was sure of that. This one would hold the flag for a bit too long, and before he dropped it, he would lift it a bit to get a wider, more spectacular swing. Linetti would go on the lift and make a fifth of a second up for himself. He ran the engine up. The fat starter's shoulders bulged, the flag imperceptibly lifted and started down. Linetti let in the clutch, bore down on the gas, and got away in a rush. He was a clear half-length ahead of the blue Talbot. It was enough. He grabbed the Maserati's crooked gear shift, banged it into second, and wound the engine up tight, snatched third and ran it up to 7,000, slid through the first corner with the ease of a boy pulling a toy around the floor on a string, and settled down into the first straight, 3 miles long. He stood on the throttle and locked his knee. There was 175 miles per hour in the car under him, and Linetti wanted all of it. It was a good French road, string straight and lined with poplars that had watched two wars. The trees slid past in a smooth and solid wall, and the road rushed hysterically under the bellowing Maserati like something in a nightmare. Linetti knew every pebble in the road. He had carted plenty of silverware, plenty of francs away from this circuit before the war. They'd called the race something else in those days. Now, It was the Grand Prix Robert Benoit. Benoit, another hero of the resistance like Lasselle. He had driven in Bugattis before the war. The Germans killed him. Linetti remembered him well, a big, pleasant man. He would win Benoit's race now, and a few of them would mutter about it. Why did it have to be Linetti? Linetti shrugged. He would not be around to hear them. He shot a quick look into the left-hand mirror. The Talbot was 50 yards behind him, the Alpha hard on its tail. Linetti grinned. Driving lessons given here, he said to himself. A right-angle turn, one of the nasty ones, loomed ahead. Linetti braked at the last possible tenth of a second, yards past the normal point. The engine screamed as he kicked it into third. He put the right wheel 6 inches from the grass and kept it there to a hair as the car cornered in an insanely fast four-wheel slide. He flicked it straight and roared at the hill ahead. He had doubled his lead on Lasselle, and he screamed with laughter and pounded on the side of the car. They will write about that one all right, he thought. At the second corner, Linetti clearly demonstrated that his 51st winter had taken nothing from his legendary skill. He laid the elderly Maserati into the bend at an incredible rate of knots, causing grief to the novice Lasselle, who foolishly imitated him and lost vast yardage in the subsequent skid. Il Maestro slid the corner in his patented position and was obviously looking at 8,000 RPM as he urged his ancient mount up the hill, steering with one hand and beating happily on red tin with the other. The red car left the ground at the top of the hill and sailed like a bird for 50 feet. It came down square and straight, and Linetti grabbed fourth gear and rocketed away. He felt wild exhilaration, and he screamed again. At the 20th lap, Linetti had increased his lead to 22 seconds, but the little man was obviously in distress. He was seen to be coughing continuously, and blood began to show on his sleeve as he drew it across his mouth. He held the comparatively slow Maserati in front by dint of black wizardry and a refusal to entertain any regard whatsoever for the welfare of the machinery. Minnelli and Lasselle, in faster vehicles, were able to stay in sight and pray earnestly that the Maserati would disintegrate under the punishment. The brass bright July sun was hot enough, but the shadeless grass beside the road looked cool to Pietro Linetti, because the car was a moving furnace. There never was a cool one, Linetti thought. They all roast you to death, or gas you. The noxious smell of burning gasoline and half-burnt oil was sweet to him. It opened the door of his memory on all the good and happy things that had ever come his way. It meant more than the remembrance of violets and the hair of one's first girl, or the longed-for smoke of boyhood's chimney, or the crystal scent of rain in autumn. The smell was the warp and woof of his life, but the stuff itself was killing him. He coughed and felt the bleeding, and he leaned out to gulp clean air, but it was no use, and he knew it. Still, he had lasted the first hour, and he would last the rest of it. The faster cars had lapped the others now, and there were only signals from the pits to tell position. Linetti didn't need signals. Until somebody passed him, he was first. He waved as he went by for the 30th time, and came up fast on the car ahead. He thought of passing him in the corner, but it was Danton, the Englishman, and Linetti backed off and let him go through the corner alone. He could take him at will in the long straight, and he would humiliate him there if he could, but he would not take a chance on crowding him in the corner. Linetti was not notorious for his sportsmanship, and in the old days he would crowd any man in a corner if he felt like it, but he did not feel like it now. They said he hated Englishmen, and so he did, maybe, but he was not going to kill one on the road. He blasted past Danton in the straight, staring at him. He flew on. He knew he would win. He was happy. He sat up straight, so proud of what he knew was being said of him that he could almost hear them talking. For 20 years, Linetti had been the standard by which other drivers were judged. There were many serious men who said he had been born great, that he was the only authentic genius motor racing had ever produced, that his skill could not be explained in rational terms. Linetti believed them. He knew that he could tell, for example, exactly how many pounds of a car's total weight rested on any single wheel at any time, cornering or straight, braking or accelerating. He believed that he could drive at 150 miles an hour through a slot an inch wider than the car. He had done it, so he believed it. Other men had to practice in cars, get used to them, feel out their peculiarities. Not Linetti, il maestro. They were all one to him, so long as they had four wheels, something to steer with, and a loud pedal that could be held flat on the floor. He put it down hard now to try to pass the two cars looming up ahead. One was Martin, a notorious road hog. The other was old Leon. They were having a private race for the corner, and when Martin saw Linetti coming up behind him, he moved over imperceptibly, blocking him off and letting Leon get around first. The three cars went around nose to tail in a hellish howling racket and slid into the straight like triplets. The others drew away there. Linetti put the whole weight of his body on the throttle and shook the wheel in rage, but the revolution counter needle would not go up where he wanted it, past the red danger line. He moved to the right-hand side of the road. The pits were only a couple of miles ahead. He stopped the car where they were waited for him, and old Giorgio threw up the bonnet, the question in his eyes. "Plug!" Linetti croaked. Giorgio savagely swiveled out the plugs. Nobody could do it faster, but he couldn't do it in 20 seconds, and Lassell and Minnelli roared past him. They were out of sight when the bonnet banged down and he was pushed off. Linetti had never been beloved by other drivers. He gave them good cause now to hate him. He drove as if he were alone on the road. He passed them in bunches as they braked for the corners, slamming through them flat out to stand viciously on the brake for a second and then drift through the corner in his own weird slide. He went into every corner with the nose of the car pointed dead wrong for the entrance but right for the exit, stealing yards and seconds from the lesser men who had to do it by the book. He went into one corner behind Martin, caught him in it, and slid around him, staring arrogantly out at the 6 inches that lay between the two cars and instant death. He was coughing continuously now. The blood ran unheeded down his chin, and he grinned wickedly at Martin as he left him. He had terrified the man, he knew it, and he ran away from him, roaring with mirth and pounding the side of his car like a maniac blacksmith. Minnelli, he passed the pits, his Alfette blowing out fog of blue smoke. He could see the Talbot ahead. He had two laps in which to take it, and as he passed the stands, he pointed ferociously ahead, his big white teeth stripped. "Let no one miss this," he thought. "We will see how much resistance is in this hero," he thought. "We will separate the men from the boys here. We will motor a little bit now." Lassell saw him coming, and he tried everything he knew. On the straights, he took every ounce of power the car had, held his own, but it was either slow up for the corners or crash, and the insane Italian behind him crept closer with every bend in the road. Lassell wanted to win. It was the first big race in which he had had any luck. It would make his reputation. Two, he had served under Robert Benoit, and the very idea of an Italian taking the cup away from him made him want to kill again. But every time he looked in the mirror, Linetti was a little closer to doing it. At the beginning of the last lap, in the long straight in front of the stands, it finally happened. Foot by foot, the red Maserati pulled up beside him. Linetti held the red car dead alongside, and when Lassell looked over, the little man grinned wolfishly at him. There was blood all over his shirt. As they went by the stands, locked together, Linetti bowed graciously to the people, and suddenly then, in horror, Lassell knew why he had not pulled on past. He intended to amuse them with the spectacle of two cars running suicidally together into a corner that was, at that speed, but one car wide. He was going to make the kid quit, brake, and pull over. Lassell knew, and everyone knew, that Linetti had done this 100 times in the past, and that in the end, and always, it had been the other man who felt the terror slam his foot down on the brake. Lassell decided, suddenly, that he would be the one who did not quit. Live mouse, dead lion, he thought. He kept his foot down. After all, he just might live through it. Piero Linetti was surprised, 50 yards from the corner, to find the Frenchman still with him. But he drove the bend the way he had intended to, coming out of it slightly faster to clear the road, since he knew that otherwise nothing in the world could keep Lassell from sliding into him. As it was, he felt the cars tick, nose to tail, when the blue Talbot moved behind him. It seemed to him that he heard the scream of the rubber in 2 great howls as the Talbot spun. And when he topped the hill, he heard the crash and saw in his mirror the first orange burst of flame as the car exploded against the great trees beside the road. He had won now. It was all over. They would give him the flag as he swept past. The crowds would scream his name. The journalists would pound their typewriters. He would take his victor's lap, and at the end of it, as he had so long planned, he would fold his arms, proudly lift his head, and smash himself to death against the wall in the exit road, where everyone could see that it was no accident, and no one could come to harm by it. That had been his plan. That was why he was in the race. But suddenly now, it didn't seem so much of a plan. It was empty. It was nothing. Piero Linetti lifted his foot and let the red Maserati run along the side of the road at a bare 50 miles an hour. He felt as if he could get out and walk. He could see the separate blades of grass, each petal of the flowers along the ditch. He coughed and was surprised to taste the blood. His arms trembled, and for the first time he felt the blisters on his palms. Everyone went past him. They roared by like a long freight train. He coasted into the pits. None of the din was for him. The photographers were elsewhere. "Jesus and Mary!" Giorgio screamed at him. "What happened? What broke? What let go?" "Nothing let go," Linetti said. "The car is fine. This is good iron. I took my foot off, that's all."
"Man, man, you threw it all away," Giorgio said. "For what? For that kid? That dumb frog? For what, for Christ's sake?"
Linetti looked up at him. "Take off the steering wheel, Giorgio," he said. "Take it off and lift me out of here. I want to go home."